You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 11th of January, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com because we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us today, particularly to discuss the latest episode of the Freemasonic Victors, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's had a great reaction, Part 17, far more than what I expected, which was really, really good, to be honest. Well,
it's good to see that it's still there on YouTube and you can still access it at the moment in Britain. That's definitely a bonus.
Well, yeah. That's what's Brian, isn't it?
So you've had a good reaction then from commenters. What are some of the things they've been saying about it?
Well, I mean, there's over 3,000 views. I only put it up, I think it were earlier this week. Last time I looked, about 400 odd comments, no dislikes. And what they were saying were, they could see what I was actually doing. They could see that Freemasonry is the core of the problem.
Oh, definitely, definitely, it's a huge part of it. You know, all the way looking back through it. If you have a secret society in your society, it's going to cause problems, whether it's the Jews as a separate ethnic minority, whether it's Muslims as a separate minority, or if it's a secret society made up of Gentiles that are doing Jewish bidding. And you add on to that all the ideology of deifying man and thinking that man can make his own rules and his own laws and his own morals. You know, you're just heading for trouble, really, from the first one, the first revolution.
Unless, like in Britain, you know, they've had Freemasonry, like we found out for the last 200 years, rule in Britain. But they haven't got a problem because they were Freemasonry, if you know what I mean, and still are Freemasonry.
Well, I think there's also, it's not fully Freemasons. I mean, it's not all of them. I guess the majority of the establishment, but it's not all of them. That's, you know, there are still people that are holding back.
There may well be the odd one too, but the British establishment I've researched around the time of Jack the Ripper, who was suspected of being a Mason, was that all the elite were Masons and all the high-powered people in the army and royalty, they were also all Freemasons from the throne downwards. So whether or not that has eased since then, maybe, who knows, but certainly at that time it was... one of the reasons they couldn't catch Jack the Ripper, I believe.
Well, this is why they continue to push liberalism and progressivism and all these Enlightenment values that go along with Masonry. But today we're going to concentrate on what's on your video, and I've taken some notes from it, so we can go through that and look into it really. Because what really, you know, I find exciting about all this is the way that the National Socialists dealt with it, and they really did deal with it. And they removed it.
They really did deal with it, yeah.
This was a good thing. I mean, just some of these notes from the video. You say that the Masonic leaders were executed, and then there was arrest and imprisonment for those who had not resigned from these lodges. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, about these ones that were executed and the arrest and imprisonment?
Well, yeah, you did the same, if you can recall, with the communists. The commissars, he felt, or the Germans felt, couldn't be unbrainwashed. There were, you know, people implementing communism, so they had to go. But he didn't kill them all, you know what I mean? He just, you know, hopefully, like he did in Germany, he managed to turn some. And it's the same with Freemasonry. He thought anyone in charge of a lodge has gone beyond redemption. He's Satanist. And what do you do with Satanists? You know, Hitler execution.
Yeah, because I think some of the ones that resigned from Masonry were later on during the war, they were allowed to join up because they needed men, and because they had resigned from it, they didn't know fully what they were getting themselves into, I guess. I think a lot of Masons don't really understand just what they're getting themselves into.
No. That's been in some of the comments on YouTube that I've been delving in and speaking with. Quite obvious, a lot don't realise at all.
They put an article in the Völkische Beobachter, and that was accusing the Masons and the Jews of conspiring to create the World Republic, which basically the New World Order.
That's right, yeah. And of course, they were right, because early on in the series, I mentioned Roosevelt, you know, he was well aware of the New World Order. The presidents and the prime minister during the war were also aware of it. But what they were doing, they managed to infiltrate, Britain was ruled by Freemasonry, America was ruled by Freemasonry, they infiltrated, but the masses, obviously, of the armed forces didn't have a clue, and they were going over to Europe to fight what they thought was Hitler and a monster, when actually they were going over there and saving communism, which was hand in hand with Freemasonry.
And the next bit talks about the B'nai B'rith Lodge and the B'nai B'rith Lodge members being arrested and the premises cleared out. And I would have thought that would have been the first one they would have gone for. I mean, that's the Jewish Freemasonry.
That's the Jewish. That's right. Yeah, gangsters, in other words. He took them down first. But what he did more than anything, he educated the nation, explained like he normally does. I mean, you saw him in a speech in The Greatest Story in Austria, where he said, "I'm your teacher," he taught the nation what was the problem, and they understood it, which is why in the end they never handed him over or capitulated.
Well, you would also think that if they went into this Jewish lodge, then it was the evidence that they found in that Jewish lodge that helped them to produce this article that accused the Masons and the Jews of working together to create this World Republic. I mean, it must have been in this B'nai B'rith Lodge that they found that. Do you know if there's any translations of what was actually written in that, or has that sort of disappeared in the mist of time?
I think there are some translations on archive.org. I mean, people just think it was National Socialists which had a thing about Freemasonry. But actually, Dusseldorf in World War One, General? He wrote several books revealing secrets about Freemasonry, and that was before National Socialism came to power. So even in World One, they knew about Freemasonry.
Well, there were people in Britain that were exposing it as well. Nestor Webster and others as well. I mean, Nestor Webster, I think, was the first one to expose this conspiracy. She didn't really talk about the Jews in it. I think she thought that the Britain's Jews were loyal to Britain. So, but she did expose the conspiracy, and that all these secret societies were conspiring together to have a world revolution and overturn the monarchies and overturn the church and put themselves in that position. And that's pretty much what we've got today. And they put science in that position, and everybody has to bow down to science now. And if science says this is the way things are, then we ignore what the church has told us and what our traditions are, and we go along with science instead. And just evolution is one thing from it. And if science doesn't actually fit up with what they're saying, then they'll just ignore it. Like when they say that we're all the same under the skin, it's just a different skin colour. Or there's no difference in IQ between the races. So even when science doesn't actually fit, that they will still lie just to try and push their agenda across. It's liberal, right. Progressive.
Yeah, they will. Yeah, I mean, in a way, I suppose science is the new religion.
Yeah.
Well, what people got to understand, though, is that the bankers today are the new monarchs. And how they work it is they've turned practically every country in the world into a corporation. And like, say, down in Australia, they'll have a corporation made called the State of South Australia. But that won't be Australia. That will be a corporation belonging to America, owned by the Federal Reserve. And they've got all these crafty ways of, of fooling people with birth certificates written with capital letters, which mean nothing. That doesn't even constitute a court case, you know, and people are, they're shown a lot of things, but people don't understand what they are. And so consequently, they'll sign these things or they'll take this birth certificate, which will leave them a debtor. Whereas if they knew what they were doing, they could have got another birth certificate and they would be a creditor. All these debtors, you see, are the ones paying off all these loans to the banks. If they ever found out and it switched over, the banks would be in real problems. Well, they've done this with every country, and they tried to do it with Germany, and Hitler said, no way. And that didn't help his cause for a world war.
I think all the colonies, they've done that too. Their corporations, United States of America, yeah. Canada, Australia. I mean, you think about it, you've got a nation there, and the nation is all working, and it should all be working for that nation's good. Whatever the wealth is from that nation should then get spent on that nation. It should be directed back within. And you could think, well, if it was a corporation, okay, that's an idea of what the nation is. You could have it as a corporation, and all the wealth that it made would be funded back to it. So that's not really the problem. The problem is that the wealth is funneled away. It doesn't go back to the nation. It goes back to these bankers that are creating.
As a foreign entity, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As a form of debt. So the nation actually gets poorer and poorer. It gets just enough so that they don't riot and revolt. And then you've got this small group of elites, mainly made up of Jews, that make all the money out of it. They make all the wealth.
Yeah, they're the most. Well, I mean, they print money as well, so that makes them even more powerful. I mean, you know, they've got money to burn, whereas, you know, there's nobody on earth can compete with that. If you're printing money and then you're taking all this revenue from around the world, the mind boggles how much they're actually sitting on, while the rest of the world struggles, you know.
Well, we know the connections between Masonry and, even though they claim to be taking down the monarchs, I mean, the Queen of England and the Prince Charles, he's part of Masonry as well. So we know that there is royalty that's involved in it. How much do you know about these bankers being involved in it? Are they highly involved in Masonry as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're steeped in Freemasonry, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, these are all Rothschild's boys. And Rothschild's, I mean, it wasn't Freemasonry as such to begin with. It was in 1776 when the Illuminati, the Rothschilds cabal, took over Freemasonry or amalgamated with it. And consequently, all these lodges, what they had all over the world, served as a vehicle then for the Rothschild bankers, you know, to put these fifth columns in all these countries, keep it nice and secret, tell the people, oh, this makes good men better. And you can, if you're a businessman, you'll make some great contacts. And this is the allure of these people to join, who really don't have a clue what they're joining.
It's like a secret society that's just pushing the world system onto these various countries and enforcing it and encouraging it and sort of pushing things towards the direction that they want it to go. And you've got various heads, I guess, that are running these banks, incredibly powerful people, and their will, what they want to see happen, is what happens, and the general idea of what's good for everyone gets filtered down to these Masons, the lower Masons. So they're all sort of pushing for the same ideas. Would that be a good way to describe it, do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, their ideas are not necessarily good at all for us. It's like the invasion of Europe of all these Africans. I mean, there was a Jew talking last night on Hard Talk on BBC, and they said it's the best thing what could happen to Europe. It's going to be more secure, more safe.
Oh, I saw that.
And then when the guy questioned, and when the guy questioned him then on why, you know, Germany killed this, stopped this way of killing these animals, which the Jews and the Muslims do, kind of a cruel way to cut a cow's throat and let it bleed to death. He said, well, it's not so much the four-legged animals what's the problem, it's the two-legged animals. And I smiled at that comment because I knew what he was thinking.
Yeah, I was thinking when he was saying, oh, it's anti-Semites doing that. And he was saying, well, isn't it people that care about animals? No, it's anti-Semites. It's anti-Semites.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
What about, don't the Muslims, they kill their animals in that same way? It's, so they're all pushing the same ideology, and Hitler was obviously awoke to it. I mean, basically, he was looking at threats to Germany, and Freemasonry, that was a threat to Germany. Communism, that was a threat to Germany. Jews, that was another threat to Germany. And all three of them are linked in together. So he was really in a war against all of them. I've got some notes here so we can look in detail at what the National Socialists actually did. This comes from one of the Holocaust sites, surprisingly enough. I think Museum of the Holocaust or something. But it's quite detailed. May 1934, the Ministry of Defence banned membership in lodges to all personnel, soldiers and civilian employees. During the summer of 1934, after Heinrich Himmler and Reinhard Heydrich completed their takeover and centralisation of the Gestapo, the German police forcibly closed down many Masonic lodges and branch headquarters of the Masons and confiscated their assets, including their libraries and archives. And, you know, this really, this says that, that they were against Masonry. How can people say that Adolf Hitler was a Mason, or his conspiracy sites try to say they're Masons?
Just to confuse people.
Yeah, well, this is from the Holocaust Museum as well. And you know, they're admitting it. They're saying, well, look, he's closing all this down. They're not trying to say he was a Mason. On October the 28th, 1934, Reich Minister of the Interior, Wilhelm Frick, issued a decree defining the lodges as hostile to the state and hence subject to having their assets confiscated. Finally, on August 17th, 1935, citing the authority of the Reichstag fire decree, Frick ordered all remaining lodges and branches dissolved and their assets confiscated. So that's all of them. That's all the lodges gone in Germany.
Yeah.
And they're identified as being hostile to the state. Freemasons.
They were offered the chance to close down voluntarily. And some tried to get around it by calling themselves, well, this is a Christian lodge. But Hitler wouldn't have nothing of it. He wanted them all closed.
And this is the thing. If they've shown the evidence to the people, because they didn't just say the lodges are hostile to the state. They said, look, this is what they've been doing. This is what they've been planning. This is the evidence that we found in the B'nai B'rith Lodge. If you're loyal to Germany, you obviously don't want to be a part of these Masonic lodges, do you? So anybody that was still showing loyalty to them is showing that they're hostile to the state as well. So I should imagine most Germans left voluntarily and said, we don't want anything to do with this now that it's all become exposed.
Well, I think obviously some did once they realised, because they would have been told and shown evidence of it being satanic as well. So a lot of people were joining just for the sake of, making up contacts. They would have obviously been horrified. But the hierarchy, they were the problem. They were the people who knew what were going on, knew the agenda, and were saying this, just like Roosevelt. And I mean, they had an argument over paganism in Europe. And they were saying that Hitler wasn't a Christian and all this kind of carry on. But they'll never say, because I said, well, he never built the Pentagon. The Pentagon is the most powerful magical symbol you can get. Roosevelt built it. But nobody says anything. They just say Hitler or Freeman. We're no proof. It's just, it's like you say, how people didn't realise years ago that the National Socialists closed down Freemasonry and all this rubbish about him being Freemason. It's just lies.
Well, this is the interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, David Icke and the conspiracy crowd, they're all up on the Freemasons. They understand the Freemason involvement, yet none of them are aware that Hitler got rid of them all. You would think that would be something that would turn them to, to becoming nationalists, really.
And those who are, they use the excuse that he wanted to get rid of the Freemasons because he wanted this occult himself. It's like, just to get real. Look what he did. He opened churches up. He banned Freemasonry. He fought communism, which is Freemasonry's brother. It's so ridiculous for words.
Freemasonry also became a particular obsession of the Chief of Security Police and SD, Reinhard Heydrich, who counted the Masons, along with the Jews, and the political clergy. Now this, you can see this is quite accurate because it says here, the political clergy. So it's not saying the clergy. Yeah. It's not saying all the church, but the political clergy. Yeah. So that's the politically active communist clergy.
Left-wing. Yeah.
So the Masons, the Jews, and the political clergy have all been counted together as the most implacable enemies of the German race. In 1935, Heydrich argued for the need to eliminate not only the visible manifestations of these enemies, but to root out from every German the indirect influence of the Jewish spirit, a Jewish liberal and Masonic infectious residue that remains in the unconscious of many, above all in the academic and the intellectual world. And that just shows you, you know, how strongly they felt about this. And they explained it in ways that made sense, that appealed to the people. Because you could check this for yourself. You could check the Jewish influence and what it was that the Jews were promoting, what the liberal influence was, what the Masons were promoting, all these degenerate ideas. And nobody wants to be degenerate. White people don't want to be immoral. We don't want these bad influences. And they were appealing to the good in people. If you look at the mainstream media today, it appeals to vice, basically. You know, it will show you pornography and say, well, you're free to do this. You're free to go to the gay disco, as E. Michael Jones says. Whereas here, the Germans are saying, you're free to reject all of this. You're free to reject all of this, and you can reject all of this. And they identified the source of it. Now, I think that's really good on Reinhard Heydrich here. He created a special section of the SS Security Service, Section 11/111, to deal specifically with Freemasonry. The SD was particularly interested as its personnel believed that Freemasonry exercised actual political power, shaped public opinion through control of the press, and was thus in a position to provoke war, subversion, and revolution. Later, Section 7B1 of the Reich Security Main Office, an amalgamation of the SD and the security police formed in 1939, took over the section devoted to investigating Freemasonry. So that, you know, that proves it all, doesn't it? They knew that they had political power, that they were in a position to promote war, subversion, and revolution, and they knew all that because they'd seen it. It's in the evidence.
Well, in Communism by the Back Door, I stress the power that Freemasonry had with not just the political scene, but in the music industry. You can't get past a certain door without being one of the club. Some refuse, morally right, but others can't refuse and want the money and go through the door. Same with Hollywood. Hollywood is steeped in Freemasonry, which is why they made films about Hitler, you know, for all these years, demonizing him. And there's all parts of society Freemasonry has got a hold of. And it stems from this New World Order, it's Luciferian, cameras everywhere. And, you know, it'll get to a point where we'll have cameras in the house and somebody at the end of the street watching a wall of cameras.
I think they were hoping for that with the laptop cameras, that they'd be able to film everyone.
It's it's exactly the same thing. And if you leave your microphone on, I suppose, which I do a lot, they can hear as well.
Well, it's interesting here that, you know, they've actually formed a particular department, a specific department to deal with this problem. Of all these Freemasons, this secret society that has infiltrated all these important positions in society, and this is the same throughout every country. And Germany was the first one to actually do something about this and take it seriously.
Yeah, they were. Can you stand Steinreich as well and kill this other myth, which is often said about Adolf Hitler admiring Blavatsky, because Blavatsky teaches. In fact, some say she actually was a Freemason. To say that we had allowed it, I believe that there is certain lodges which do. And Blavatsky was a Freemason, and she spread Gnosticism and everything that, you know, the Masons, that's the core belief. Hitler wouldn't have gone anywhere near Blavatsky, nor the Lucis Trust, which is situated in London and in the United Nations. They have a library in London. That would have been burnt long ago. So it's just complete fabrications and lies.
Well, I think if you look at all of it, all these secret societies, like Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, and then you look at Kabbalah, and then you look at Theosophy, yeah. Blavatsky's thing, they're all like different brands of the same product. That's what it is. That's what Correct. It is. They're just different brands of the same product. It's the same sort of magical stuff that they're interested in. It's the same ideals that they're pushing. The liberated man that can have as much sex as he likes, the liberated woman that can have as much sex as she likes, sodomy, sex magic. Yeah. And the opposite of self-restraint, which is how it always was before. If you wanted to be powerful, you know, you would be celibate in some cases, celibate warriors, but you would have self-restraint and you would have self-discipline. And that was the key to happiness. And what we're told now is the key to happiness is to give in to all your vices. And that was a part of this. That's a part of the Gnostic way of doing things. Freemasonry, magic, sex magic, tantric sex, that they call it.
Greed is good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all connected to it.
Greed is good. Yeah.
Blavatsky was looking at all this Indian stuff, and that links up with the tantric stuff, and the tantric stuff is sex magic. It goes back to Gnostic sex magic.
Crowley, yeah.
Yeah, and Crowley, again, he's linked in with it. And really, that path is the feminist path. It's the female path. It's the path that says, oh, there's a goddess. There's equality in religion. Yeah. It's not male. It's not a patriarchy. And you know, all this equality that we have today and the way that our society is, it's big sister. It's not big brother. It's a female way of doing things, of materialism rather than spiritualism and taking and never having satisfying the appetite. Whereas the male way of doing things is to sacrifice and to do things for other people rather than taking for yourself. Because that's what man needs to do. He needs to provide for his wife and he needs to provide for his children. He doesn't provide for himself. And he needs a woman
that's been taken away, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are more women now are going out to work and men are shopping at home. Complete reversal.
And if you look right back to the beginning, what do we get? Well, we get Adam listening to his wife Eve. And what did Eve teach him? She told him to eat the apple.
Yeah. Exactly.
These things happen again and again, and we don't actually pay any attention to them, and we ignore them, and we end up in the situation that we're at today. And the National Socialists were pointing out all this subversion that the Masons were responsible for, and it wasn't just in Germany as well. Go on.
Well, Berlin was a prime example of the state that city was in, and the morality of the National Socialists clean that out, and nobody ever gives them any credit.
You're clipping a little bit there, Dennis. I don't know if your wire isn't plugged in correctly or whatever.
Let me check. That should be all right. Is that right?
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Well, as I say, they didn't just liberate Germany from Freemason. As they liberated Europe, the Germans forcibly dissolved Masonic organizations and confiscated their assets and documents wherever they established an occupation regime. After a lodge was closed, it was looked through for membership lists, important library and archival items were taken, furnishings and other cultural artifacts and items seized would be sent on to the appropriate German agency, primarily the SD and later the RSHA. They must have amassed masses of evidence of conspiracy, wouldn't you think, Dennis, when they were doing this?
Yeah.
Masses of evidence.
Yeah, well, another thing I'd like to say is when Hitler finally, the war was underway, Hitler, in every country that he took in Europe, he replaced probably a Freemason of Rothschilds with a Christian. Now, when I say World War II was a holy war, when you look around today, there are no Christian leaders. In fact, the only one I know of, and we're not even sure there, is Putin. But all of Europe, there is not one Christian leader. And that has got to tell you, if Hitler was in power now, they would be Christian leaders. They lost the war. They're all Masonic. I mean, even Viktor, the Hungarian guy who's, yeah, who's fighting to save, he's a Freemason.
How do you identify that he's a Freemason?
I've read it somewhere, but it didn't surprise me because he wouldn't get in power if he wasn't.
Yeah.
They're all Freemasons.
Yeah, you just sort of assume that they are all Freemasons, but he, you know, he does kind of identify strongly, yeah, as a Christian, doesn't he?
Without a doubt. And Paul's another example where a Polish guy was talking, and he was talking real sense, right, about these, he didn't want any of the immigrants, all the violence which Germany's facing. But then he said, when questioned, well, do you want to leave the EU? Of course not. We don't want to leave the EU. Well, he doesn't want to leave the EU because he's easily a Freemason as well. But he doesn't agree with the immigration.
I think Poland gets a lot of money from the EU. I think that's the reason why. Why they don't want to leave. I mean, Hungary doesn't want to leave either. What Orban is saying is that we need new leadership in the EU, and that's why we've got Italy working together with Poland and with Hungary, and hopefully there will be a change in the leadership. But so what
Italy
saying
haven't left the EU neither. Do you understand what I'm saying? If that was Hitler, they would have left.
Yeah, well, Salvini still wants to leave, doesn't he? I mean, they've said pretty strongly that they want to leave, but at the moment they're just staying in. Basically because they get the money from them. That's the thing. But what you're saying is, so even these leaders that are Christian, they're Christian, but they're also Masons as well. Or what's the word for it? Is it Blue Lodge Masons? The Masons that don't really understand what's going on.
Lower end, yeah. Yeah, the ones which, I mean, Pike actually said they weren't meant to know what it were all about. They were meant to think they know what Masonry was all about. And these were Pike's words. And he were a war criminal and a Satanist.
Well, they have to have some kind of disguise for themselves, don't they? They disguise themselves as being up to charitable pursuits and looking after widows and orphans. They have to have some kind of window dressing. And, you know, the best way to do that is to have people that don't actually know what's going on, but think that they do know what's going on. Because
that's a perfect world, isn't it?
Yeah, they're not likely to give up the truth. But getting back to this here, when they were liberating Europe, German occupied Paris hosted an anti-Masonic exhibition in October 1940, as did German occupied Brussels in February 1941. And this wasn't really an anti-Masonic exhibition. It was an exhibition showing all the evidence of what the Masons were doing to subvert these nations. And also that the anti-Christian side of it is what they were showing. And once again, the information from these anti-Masonic exhibitions, it's all covered up. There's very little that you can actually find online dealing with it. The odd couple of photos, that's about it. But there must have been, you know, loads and loads of evidence. You know, like when you go to a museum and you've got plaques and you've got lots of writing and lots of exhibits, there's none of that that's available. And the reason it's not available is because it must have been really, really damning. It must have really shown what the Masons were up to. Otherwise, we'd be able to see this evidence. They wouldn't have hidden it.
The trainload of evidence what Stalin took back from Berlin back to Moscow, which I'm convinced he's found something he shouldn't have done, which is why he turned. When he died, the Rothschilds got it back. They did some kind of deal with the new president, which was, I think it was it Khrushchev or something like that. They did some kind of business deal, and Khrushchev threw in all that Masonic memorabilia in with the deal for practically free. So Rothschild got all that train load back.
There must have been something in there that was important.
Sure, yeah.
So where did that go? Did that go to an American politician or who was brokering the deal?
London.
Yeah, but who was actually doing the deal? Who was actually doing the deal with Khrushchev?
Well, Rothschild, I think, from what I can remember.
As a representative of the Masons?
No, it wasn't actually to do with Freemasonry. They were just doing, once Stalin had died, right, the bankers were back in control of the Soviet Union because they got, obviously, the Jews poisoned them and they've got their man back in now, Khrushchev, whoever it was their man. And so, obviously, now business can continue like it did before Stalin turned. So this was just thrown in as a probably a sweetener.
Yeah, it must have been important to it must have been important to him. There must have been some important stuff there.
Oh, there'd have been some papers in there what people were other than the people who were meant to be to see. Stalin obviously saw some things that he weren't meant to see and didn't like it.
Well, the way that this is reported, they say, oh, well, all these artifacts were taken from these lodges and traditional things, and it doesn't actually tell you about all the paperwork that was there. And a big part of Masonry from the Illuminati onwards was taking records. And what they would do is that they'd get the members to self-analyze themselves and say what their weaknesses were, what they were good at, and they would keep records of all of this, and also their vices. So there was information where people could be blackmailed in there. And this was the beginning of Freud's ideas and psychoanalysis. It all goes back to the Illuminati. And now we've got everybody that just does it themselves on Facebook. But back at this time with Masonry, they would have had all these in-depth records on everybody that was involved in Masonry and what their weaknesses were, what their strengths were, and what they were involved in. So they would, and all their connections that they had. So if they wanted to say that the leadership wanted to do something in France, they would look through their records and they'd find somebody who knew the French diplomat, who was on good terms with the French diplomat, and then they would set them up together. So it was all that sort of information that would have been discovered by the Germans when they did this, unless of course the Masons were able to remove a lot of it before the Germans went in.
No, I don't think so, because especially in Europe, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, as soon as they invaded, bang, straight to the lodges.
Because they would have known, wouldn't they? I mean, when the Lithuanians knew that the Germans were coming and the communists were leaving, they knew beforehand. So the Masons would have known that the Germans were likely to be coming in. So they would have tried to hide it all.
Well, I suppose they could burn it. Well, I think if they did try and hide it, it would have been found.
And also they would have been identified as well by the connections from the other lodges. You see, when they went into these German lodges, they would have also got the records of the people that the German Masons were talking to in the other countries.
Yeah, who their contacts were.
Yeah, and in Britain. German wartime propaganda, particularly in the army, charged that the Jews and the Masons had provoked World War II and were responsible for the policies of US President Franklin D. Roosevelt, who was identified as a Freemason.
Another Masons.
Yeah, this is verifiable who it was that wanted to provoke World War II, because, you know, they said Judea declares war on Germany in 1932.
Holy war, yeah.
Or whatever it was. Well, and it seems to be saying here that Franklin D. Roosevelt was identified as a Freemason by them, but there's pretty conclusive evidence that he was a Freemason, isn't there? I mean, Dennis, you've mentioned this quite a few times.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying. Same with Truman. Truman was a 33 degree. There's some, I mean, I can't find exactly where it says Roosevelt is a 33 degree, but I believe he was. But every time I look, it says 32, but 32, 33, what's the difference? The thing is that, Rothschild has put another Mason in charge, and no doubt he'll have another Mason in charge of, say Mexico. You know what I mean? Because Mexico was also a Masonic government. So where Hitler put the Christian in, they put the Freemason in. It's not hard to see, it's the Holy War.
So all the people that were aligned against Hitler, all these leaders were Masons, and they worked this out. Masons as puppets and Jews in the background.
Yeah, well, I mean, you take out the Jews, then you take out everything else, because it all stems from the Jews.
And Masons are like their golem, aren't they? You know, the golem, which is the creature that the rabbis make that fights the wars for the Jews, And that's what these Freemasons are. They're Gentiles that fight wars for the Jews, puppets of the Jews.
Well, I think they send the soldiers of the nation they're in charge of. I don't think they send their own sons and daughters, but certainly the nation's sons and daughters were fighting on their behalf, yeah.
In August 1940, the Vichy France regime issued a decree declaring Masons to be enemies of the state and authorising police surveillance of them. The French wartime authorities even created a card file that identified all members of the Grand Orient of France, a leading French Masonic organisation. And that's really cheeky, that is, saying that the French wartime authorities even created a card file. The Masonic lodges had card files themselves. That was specifically they had card files on everyone in the Masonic lodge, and sometimes files on the people that were outside of it, because they were operating like an intelligence service, like secret police that keep records of all the people around them. This is why they got rid of the Jehovah's Witnesses, because the Jehovah's Witnesses were keeping records. When a Jehovah's Witness goes around to knock on your door, and if you talk to them, they will write all that down and they'll put that in a card file. So the next time a Jehovah's Witness comes knocking at your door, they will know everything that you said to them in the past, because it was written down on a card file. And these Masonic lodges were operating like that as well. And this piece here has the cheek to say, oh, the French wartime authorities even created a card file. Where did they get that idea from?
I'm just going to say this formula of France, Britain and America still goes on today. I mean, the last time when they bombed Libya, that trio of Masonic countries were there together. And, Macron is a banker, and Britain's run by 200 Freemasons. And I've no doubt Trump is a Freemason, because I don't think he can be president without being one.
Well, I suspect Trump would probably have been very keen to be a Freemason. I mean, he's an Anglophile.
We have business contacts, yeah?
Yeah, and business. The thing is, I think in America, it's very big in America, because they look at it as, oh, that's very traditional. That's European traditions, that is. It's a secret European tradition that goes back centuries. So there's an encouragement to become a member of it because of that.
Well, I think it's about 6 million, contacts. I think, there in America.
Well, as you say later on in the program, there was an expose of there being 2 million Masons or something of the last 200 years. I think we'll get to that a little bit later, though. After the end of World War II, vast collections of Masonic archives and library collections that had been seized by German authorities were captured in turn by Allied and Soviet forces. For example, a significant Masonic archive was found in Silesia in eastern Germany by Soviet troops in the last days of World War II. The Soviet authorities shipped the records to Moscow, where they were held in secret archives. Other Masonic-related materials were recovered in Poland. Do you think those are the records that you were on about that ended up going back to Rothschild, the ones that were shipped to Moscow from Silesia there?
Well, they could well be, but I think that the train load was from Berlin, so they probably would have had a collection from all over. But the point being is, the Germans didn't destroy all this. They kept it all, and obviously, at the end of the war, a lot of stuff went back to the Masons, but they didn't destroy it.
It's a shame there wasn't the ability to copy it all and distribute it to other countries. Yeah, we just didn't have the communication technology back then that we have now. Because it must have been really important stuff for them to keep it all instead of just destroying it. Must have been.
Well, it probably went back to the French Revolution.
And and the way that they were desperate to silence them all after the war, weren't they? They wanted to exterminate them all, get rid of them all, so they couldn't tell their secrets.
Yeah.
Because many of the Freemasons who were arrested were also Jews and or members of the political opposition, it is not known how many individuals were placed in concentration camps and or were targeted only because they were Freemasons. Some former lodge members, as individuals, participated in or were associated with German resistance circles. Some were arrested and executed during World War II. So that admits it. That many of the Freemasons who were arrested were also Jews. or were communists.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Stauffenberg and his crew were not Freemasons, because they were all officers and they disliked Hitler intensely because he was a corporal, but probably because he was a Freemason as well.
Well, they're saying a lot of the German resistance circles were made up of these Masons as well. I dare say the partisans and the French terrorists, the French resistance, that was probably had a lot of Masonic involvement in it as well. Well, after that bit, after looking back at what happened during the war and the way that the National Socialists dealt with it, you then start looking at Britain. You say that there are 2,800 enemies of the Reich in Britain, all Freemasons. Now, did that come from the German records? Was this during the war that they said that?
Yeah, that was during the war. Yeah, I found it in a documentary. I just replayed that again to remind people, you know, what the Germans knew and how they intended to try and stop this new world order. The whole, well, I would say three quarters of what I found was in communism by the back door, where, if you can remember, the Freemason paedophile in the Channel Islands was whinging at the way the SS stormed in and wrecked his temple.
Well, that information, the 2,800 enemies of the Reich in Britain, that must have come from information from these other lodges that they had...
could well be. I can't think of any other way.
...requisitioned. So they knew how many there were in Britain. They eradicated it in the Channel Islands. But these enemies of the Reich that were all Freemasons, I mean, that was proved later on, wasn't it? That was the truth. In 2018, it was revealed. A list of 2 million Masons made public by Ancestry.com, including all their important offices. And that basically proved that what the National Socialists were saying about Britain back then was true.
Yeah, because the guy who was in that particular part of the documentary, he was kind of mocking the Germans and saying, like, did they come over and try to convince us there was 200 Freemasons or something. And that was like a couple of years ago now, and I put that out in communism by the back door. Just this, I think it was you who saw the article. Just this month, they've owned up to the fact that Britain has been ruled for 200 years by these Freemasons, which obviously the connection with the Jews, it goes hand in glove since it took over the Bank of England.
Yeah, it was Ancestry.com recently. I mean, I'm surprised more hasn't actually been made of that, and I'm surprised that they allowed that.
Well, I said they're all... They're still in the slumber, aren't they, in this country? They've no idea exactly what's been revealed.
Well, then you cut back to the Bolsheviks, and you talk about somebody called Christian G. Rakovsky, who was a founder member of communism. He was the ambassador to Paris, and he's at a Stalin show trial, and he claimed not to be a Freemason, but one of them. What do you think he meant by that, Dennis?
No, that's not quite what he meant. What he meant was what he was telling them, he was saying to them, I don't know this as a Freemason. I know this, although I am a Freemason, I know this because I am one of them. So he was a Freemason.
What did he mean by I'm one of them?
I would imagine the Jews.
Right, that's a little bit confusing there. Then you've got... Lenin, and he quotes that the state is being driven by somebody else.
Yeah, well, this is what I've been saying for the past 6 or 7 months, probably longer now, that it dawned on me that the bankers run Russia simply by the fact they don't need any evidence. I mean, they won the revolution, they funded the revolution. I think it were a shift who plundered them for 600 million rubies, probably a lot more. So it's obvious who's in charge. He's not just handing it over to Stalin and Trotsky, these two working class tourists, if you like. They're going to run Soviet Union, but they're going to run it secretly because obviously even I missed it. So that changes a whole lot of things. That means that things like Katyn, orders from the US bankers. That means that the army of Stalin on the verge of invading Europe in 1941, orders from US bankers. Stalin took his orders from them, as did Lenin. And as Lenin put in that piece was assured, the car doesn't go in the direction he wants to. It's another power driving it.
Yeah, he's admitting it there, isn't he? That he's taking orders from somebody else.
Sent to me. I was on the moon when he sent to me. That's thanks to him.
Well, then you move forward into the 21st century, and you show David Crowley, who we've talked about before, and his movie that he was making, Grey State, which showed an executioner with a Masonic apron. I think that was the bit that got the funding withdrawn from his movie, was the fact that it showed this Masonic apron in a negative.
Yeah, that could well be.
As a negative.
I mean, such an iconic. I mean, you just don't put a Mason in there, do you? Unless it is a Mason.
Yeah, I think
that's all that. You know.
That's definitely what he was trying to show. He was trying to show that it was Masons behind everything. And the mainstream Hollywood, they won't have that. And he's talking about the police state, which we've got now, basically. We've got a soft police state, I guess.
Yeah. What can turn any side.
But then he's talking about RFID chips. And the fear at the time was that people were going to be injected with these RFID chips and they'd be able to find out where anybody was at any one time.
Well, they have the technologies, don't they?
Yeah,
dogs are chipped out of the air.
Well, everybody has cell phones now instead. You can show how dated this is, because the worry was everybody was worried about RFID chips. And while everybody was distracted by that, everyone was picking up these cell phones and these smartphones.
Yeah,
and exactly. Smartphones do everything that the RFID chip was supposed to do and more, a lot more.
And time, location, etc.
Everything's there. And then he showed the Masons using the guillotine, which is like pointing towards the Masons being behind the French Revolution and a long list of revolutions that you show there. So it's got the link between that. And then you show George Bush, and he's talking about the New World Order, that famous phrase. And then you say, to draw the link all together, you then talk about how the Bolsheviks in America then became the neocons. That's one that a lot of people have problems with, because they think, well, aren't they both at opposite ends of the scale? But they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that, how they became the neocons?
Yeah, well, I showed that in Communism by the Back Door. Michael Jones did a great job on commentary, which they used in that, and he went to great lengths to show how the neocons made a deal with George Bush after the Iran revolution again. George Bush made a bid for power, and once he was in power, he could only thank the neocons for keeping him going while he was in the wilderness, because it was kicked out of the CIA. And not a lot of people know, actually, that the CIA was formed in England, which shouldn't surprise people, because with the Federal Reserve, that is controlled from London anyway, and, you know, the central banks, everything ties into London. So, at the end of the day, like, people were surprised. But then you see, Bush and these wars in the Middle East, where the revolution is now carrying on, disguised, obviously. And then you've got the Arab Spring. Then you've got the Libyan takedown. You've got the Tunisian takedown. Iraq takedown. All disguised as the same thing what they said about Germany. Oh, he's a mad dictator. Saddam's this, or Gaddafi's that. It's the same old. They use it. But instead of using, Bolsheviks as such, the Bolsheviks are more in charge now. They use the rebels. The rebels are the new Bolsheviks, or the NKVD, which spread the terror. They'll cut off a daughter's head and leave it in the fridge for the parents to find when they get home. It's the terror to frighten the nation.
Now, the neocons started out as Trotskyites, when they were young,
yeah.
obviously trying to push forward this revolution. And then as they get older, as people get older, they do tend to move towards the right from being on the left. And then they became the conservatives. But the thing that links them all together is the fact that they're all Jews. And whether it's the Trotskyites pushing the Bolshevik revolution, or whether it's neocons pushing revolutions in Syria and Iraq and Libya, they're all Jews. That's the connection.
It's the same revolutions. No different to the Spanish, no different to the German and the French, exactly the same. Because they want world domination. And Middle East, I think there's only, is it Iran? Syria's just survived, but Iran's the big one. That's the one they want.
And that's the thing that really tipped E. Michael Jones off to the Jewish role in all of this, was realizing that was the connection, because he was searching for a connection between these people, and he realized they're all Jews. It's like when you look at the bankers, they're all Jews. When you look at the pornographers, they're all Jews.
Well, he came out with a great line. He says, when you look at Trotsky and Lenin, they were being hired by Schiff, who's also a Jew, but they've got nothing in common because one's a billionaire and these two are just working class tourists. What they do have in common is they all hate Christianity. And Michael Jones went on then to explain the taking down of the Tsar and everything else, and that's just one revolution, then it spreads.
Yeah, that's the one thing that does link them all together is a hatred of Christ.
Correct.
Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast today, Dennis.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.